Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 3 of the Hexperts Battletech podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the periphery in our main segment. As new podcast guys, we'd just like to ask if you would be able to follow, like, subscribe, leave comments. It just helps us expand and spread and get across to new and existing players. Also, we do like to see all your comments, emails, and we've been taking all of your feedback back on board, as you may have seen from some of the YouTube resubmissions. For your host for this evening is myself, Lewis. Then we've got Tom.
Goddamn.
Then we're over to Nathan.
How are we doing?
And last but not least is Dom.
See you Hex Week. Oh, wait, no, that's the ending.
Well, we can finish up now. We'll move on to some news. Some news. The Hinterlands Mercenary Campaign FAQ errata is out. I think it's official. You probably know better than me, Tom.
I do. I'm so sad. To be fair, it's a really good errata. It changes some of the missions in the Hinterlands book. Most importantly, it changes War Chest points to SP.
Yeah.
Because previously, some of the missions you were paying an imaginary currency that doesn't exist, even within the game system.
That's half the fun.
I mean, most Battletech players, I think, have half a brain, so they can work out the one was meant to be the other.
I'm not sure about
but
that.
But for Lewis Fox...
Yeah, for me especially, I think.
It was really good. And I think the specification that you can't bomb VTOLs is good. But,
you are absolute scum doing that. Couldn't believe you.
I will just point out the reason
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about the reason you did it. Let's just move on from there. But, obviously, we might have a proper look through that, and we might do a little bit of a recording and talk through that if it's worth it, just because I think some of the changes are reasonably significant, and they do address some of the issues that you might find playing along.
Guys, if you're interested in hearing about that, please do, you know, comment and let us know, because it'd be really handy. Obviously, we're a podcast first and foremost, but, you know, it'd be really handy if you give us that feedback and tell us that you want to hear from us about the current game state and the updates to the current game as well.
Cool.
Yeah, I feel like I've got to say, though, about this update, one thing they've definitely improved is that for the gold hoist, you don't just do a secure mission.
I didn't think it was that bad.
No, it'd be fine if you weren't on the same team.
Yeah.
So it's just like,
do it again, guys.
Have they actually fixed that?
Yeah, is it a different mission?
No, it's like a pursuit mission.
Oh! So
got the gold, and now they're chasing after you.
That's so cool.
I'm sure
that'd be so cool if we hadn't just done Summit in our local campaign.
do it again.
I mean, we could, because it is completely different now. So maybe we will.
Super duper. Cool, so that's that. Next is something that's just come up quite recently, is we have some MechWarrior 5 clans news. Obviously, I have no idea what a clan is at this point in time.
What the hell's up with Charl?
Oh my god. There has been a Ghost Bear update with some new content coming. New mechs, new Omni-mechs. So we've got the Night Gear, Ebon Jaguar, Fire Moth, Huntsman, Rifleman 2C, Jenna 2C, Hunchback 2C, and the ever-intimidating Kodiak. Apparently also some controllable elementals, as seen in some of the teaser images as well, which is pretty cool. And last bit of good news for this week is apparently KrenskyCon is on the horizon. I think it's next week, or coming up at least very shortly. So although, very sadly, we will not be... traveling ourselves, it's a bit too far for us, and we
I spent £5 million to go to KrenskyCon, and also I'm seeing Randall himself, and he's giving me a new battle mech only made for me,
only for you, and also we didn't a lot of us didn't back at that backing point on the Kickstarters. I'm not made of money not yet anyway.
What would be the name of your custom mech, Tom, because I've already got one in mind for you.
Oh, it'd just be the Penetrator, but a new
Penetrator 2C.
But no, I just double. No, just more AMS systems underneath.
Just more.
He's all
thinking,
I want.
I was thinking the Tomcat.
Yeah, see,
Meow. See, that's a clan mech, Tom, and I don't like those. So,
see, Dom's gone down the more PG route, and Tom's already ruined our YouTube algorithm chances.
Sorry, guys, SEO down the bin for this one.
Ruined.
We'll get it next time. It's fine.
All the money that we're not earning. How terrible!
Yeah. Anyway, so that's the good news for this week. There is some bad news as well. There's some price rises due to some international tariffs.
What?
Yeah. So obviously, bad news. Things are going to be going up in price, as has been a post by Catalyst himself. Obviously. Something that some of the podcasts are putting out recently. Well, you might as well go and grab some stuff now while it's still the same price, because at some point in the near future, you will most likely see a increase in prices. However, I think Catalyst have mentioned they're going to try and streamline things and reduce things where they can. But as with all these kind of things, I can't imagine anything's really going to go down in price.
Chris, I thought tariffs meant things went down in price.
Potentially. But
that's what I was told, but apparently not the truth. Who knows?
Who knows? Cool. Well, yeah.
This is a political podcast.
Oh, no. I'm going to have to add that to the tagline.
Guys, I've got my Noam Chomsky ready. I'm ready. I've got my soapbox. Oh, just dear. Let me loose. Let me loose on the people.
It better be a hexagonal-shaped soapbox, Tom, otherwise you can't put it on the table.
Oh, damn. Okay, I'll get one for next week.
Fantastic. Cool. So that's pretty much the news, unless you guys have seen anything since that you might want to bring up?
Nope.
No. Cool. Let's move on to some hobby then. So, and hobby and games played. So I might as well start because it's at the top of the list. So for me, I felt like painting up a Caesar because he's a cool little guy. I think I got it off you, Tom. For some reason, it was missing antenna. I don't know how it could have even fallen off, but it was, which is...
Yeah, that was a weird one, to be fair. When I pulled it out of the blind box, it did have a missing antenna.
I think, actually, that you just bit it off just to spite me.
I mean, you've got a history of eating mechs, haven't you? What happened to my other mech, Tom?
Mate, I ate that one completely, straight down the gullet.
I like to think as well this week, I got my own back there by... rolling a ball into one of Tom's mechs today, not realizing it was a metal mech, and knocking it down and knocking off some of the paint. Apologies again for that, Tom. I didn't mean to do that. But that leads me on to talking about games. So myself, only able to get down for one game this week, I suppose, not being able to get chance more until now to finish up that bank heist contract. I can't remember what it's called, basically played our friend Nate from Shake Battle Roll came down to have a little game with us. Very luckily, just got off that table without taking too much damage. So I'm happy with that. Didn't lose my Inferno because it was first game with the official model, and the areas that was damaged from the previous mission didn't get destroyed as well. So I was very, very happy with that. I was sweating a lot because I was really worried I was going to be struggling with that one. I think that's pretty much me for hobby. What about yourself, Tom? What have you been doing?
I would love to say I've been doing so much painting, but unfortunately I've been distracted. I finished up painting my Dola. No, I said that last week, didn't I?
You gave the Dola a big hug. You gave it a little stroke. Maybe based it.
I did, yeah. I based and played with the Dola. It's okay. I think for 800 BV, it's fine.
It's fine. But... You sounded so sad.
Oh, man, this happens all the time. But in other hobby news, not playing games, my Gotterdammerung is getting some nice paint on him. Done some chipping on him. This is nice. Started work on a Gurkha as well.
Yep.
And put some paint down on a Marauder C for the Hinterlands. To be fair, I haven't really played any of the new campaign games because I have just been waiting for you slowpokes to catch up. So, kind of just waiting for you to have played that game, which is good that you won so that I can now take all your tasty mechs when we play each other.
Leave my mechs alone. But you did play a game this week, didn't you?
Yes, I did. It was 10k each side, played against Snord's Irregulars with some of my more heavy duty Vespa Marches mechs. went really well. The Lightning is just an absolute menace with a heavy, improved heavy Ghost Rifle and heavy PPC. And the Awesome with three heavy PPCs. Just disgusting.
More awesome than a standard awesome. Even more.
The only thing that could improve it is four heavy PPCs, but that would be too much awesome.
Too much awesome. I don't think the game could cope with that. And obviously that was from the podcast, Billy, you were playing there. And those mechs have come out real nice with that camo scheme, which I'm sure we might see some pictures of in the Instagram if they're not already up.
Absolutely.
Cool. So that all your hobby anyway, Tom?
Well, I mean, that's the only Battletech hobby. I bought a bunch of 40k Epic Eldar.
That's similar scale. That kind of counts. Just put on some hex bases and we can forgive you.
It is actually the same scale because it's all in 6mm. So no, they're going on round bases because I have hobby butterfly syndrome.
Yes.
So that's me.
Cool. So then next we'll move on to Nathan. What have you been up to, Nathan?
So for hobby-wise, I have to apologise first. I did something very un-Battletech and played Warhammer the Old World.
What were you doing?
I played in the Escalation campaign that Dom, fellow podcast member, has been running for a while, and I played Dwarves, the best faction, versus Chaos Dwarves, the second best faction, because they're also Dwarves. I managed to win that game.
You win the game.
And then, as you might have heard last episode, I was having a bit of trouble in the Hinterlands, so I've decided to switch to the Inner Sphere and bring out my Gallus Force, which is a Grasshopper and an Archer. And I played against Ian, friend of the podcast, and I still lost, but I had a lot better time because my mechs didn't instantly just evaporate.
I think that was mostly Tom's fault that your mechs instantly evaporated.
Yeah, that's fair.
All those bomber runs.
Yeah. Since then, I've got a Phantom, which I need to find a base for and get painted up.
Yeah.
And then, today, I finally managed to wrangle the Gear Falcon to actually stand up.
Right.
Even though the leg slots don't really fit. And then, just like Tom, I played a 10k game against Billy. And we're having a good time. I brought the Jade Falcons, he brought the Snords. Until about turn 15, where I was using flex sheets, because, as you know, I care for nature. I'm an environmentalist.
Yeah, we always say that.
Yeah, that's something everyone says about me.
The Green Nathan, as we call you.
Mm-hmm, Green from Nathan. But I accidentally went off the page for flex sheets and deleted my entire sheets for the game.
Oh, dear.
So then we had a laugh, and I just conceded the game to Billy. Yeah, it was an absolutely great game, to be fair.
Cool. Glad to hear that went. The Hinterlands games are going well, and you're actually getting to get those Falcons out on the board as well. Cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and is that all sorted there?
Yeah, that's everything.
Cool. And then we'll move on to Dom then. I'm going to obviously ask, have you got any more Battletech hobby done yet, Dom?
Oh, so much. So I am currently working on a small World Eaters warband to the people that know Warhammer, and by extension Warhammer the Horus Heresy. I'm building a very small sort of fun warband because I have too many Warhammer 30,000 armies anyway, so I thought it'd be a really good idea to start one of the most awkward armies to paint. Those that know the setting know that World Eaters are in white and blue, bit of a nightmare to paint, but I'm having a really fun time with it, sort of making me flex my painting muscles. Other than that, I played a game of Warhammer the Old World, not against Nathan, but against a friend of the podcast, Aaron, who plays lots and lots of Black Orcs against my Forces of Chaos, so I had a good time there too.
I heard that he might have actually had some other models other than Black Orcs recently.
Disgusting rumour.
Disgusting, not true.
Not true.
Not true.
Lies, no. Slander, misinformation.
Super. But yeah, obviously a lot of those images, we'll try and get them up on the socials. Probably the best place to see them is on our Instagram, which is hexperts_battletech_podcast. Cool. And then we'll take a short break and we'll pop on to the main segment for this episode. Catch you guys in a minute.
See you
guys.
Go-
welcome back, guys, and we're going to move on to our main topic. What is going on in the Innisphere 3025-ish periphery? So outside of the main houses and the Innisphere are the periphery states. There's quite a few states out there, and there's quite a few independent worlds that aren't part of these states. Living out here can be a little bit harder than inside the Innisphere, and people that live outside here are looked down upon slightly. They're thought of being a bit more backwards, less civilized. However, the benefits of living out here a bit further away from the core means they've got a bit more freedom, and a lot of the planets out there and the nations take advantage of this.
So it's sort of like the dirty south then.
I think people think of it like that, but it's actually probably not like that as much as you think. I think you're like the people within the inner sphere might think, oh, that's like somewhere I wouldn't want to go. It's a bit more backward, like it's a dangerous, not nice place. But as you'll see going through some of the larger nations out there, that it's not actually as bad as it sounds, and some places are actually are better than the inner sphere in some respects. But
So it's like Stoke-on-Trent then.
Stoke-on-Trent, exactly.
Just like Stoke-on-Trent.
Stoke-on-Trent, Stoke-on-Trent, obviously. Stoke-on-Trent. Yeah, one of the top tier UK city, Stoke-on-Trent there. Yeah, people look down upon it, but when you actually get there yourself, you realise it's a pinnacle of living. Cool. Let's have a look at some of these bigger nations out there. So I'll start off then with the Outworld Alliance. They're on the galactic northeast-ish. They're kind of in between, I think, roughly-ish the Draconis Combine kind of Federated Suns border. Their history, a little bit boring. There's not really a lot they do, but there is some important events that go on in this area, so we'll obviously cover these. The area was founded by a guy called Julius Santiago Alvaria, a ex-Federated Suns officer, sick of all the fighting in the sphere, in the inner sphere, set up a colony in Alfrazaz in 2413. And basically, he's not very keen on all the war, and he's kind of pushing more for a peaceful kind of place. This obviously appealed to a lot of people. So from his little world, a lot more people start flocking to the area, and they start colonizing more of the worlds around that area, and it starts to kind of progress into being the Outworlds Alliance as time goes on. The area, all the people that live there, they're seen as like peaceful colonists. Stereotypically, people call them like pacifists. That's not everyone there is a pacifist, but people kind of think of them as that. There are quite a few of them that are. They always look for like a more peaceful way out of that, out of like conflicts and such. They're known for founding the Omnish, which are basically space Amish, and they like to keep things a bit simpler. And they do use some more modern technology, but they try and use it more for like stuff like surviving rather than like military.
When you say modern technology, do you mean like sort of living equipment, or do you mean like armaments, weapons, etc.?
I suppose they probably have access to spaceships so they can move around between planets, but they probably wouldn't go to a lot of those planets wouldn't go out of their way to have battle mechs, for example, or weaponry such as nuclear weapons around, because they don't want to use them, but they might be happy to have more advanced stuff like tractors or radios or transport options.
Certainly the cutting edge of sci-fi.
Yeah, so they've probably got microwaves and USB keys the size of small cars and such. Because that's cutting edge at this point. The Alliance, after this point, has some interesting political successions, which I'm not going to go through in here because it's a bit convoluted. The forces they have there are the Alliance Military Corps. As I said, they don't like to do a lot of fighting, so it's not the biggest and most dangerous kind of forces that in the Inner Sphere. However, they are very well known for their aerospace forces, and in the nearish future, they kind of prove how good they are against some other foes that we'll talk about later on. Obviously, a little note here, they didn't even have a military force technically until the 2600s, so they had a few hundred years of actually not having an official force. But as I said, that's pretty much it. Apart from one thing that happened that kind of affected some of the SLDF kind of things going on, or the Star League, a little bit earlier on than now, which is the Santiago Massacre, which started off as a DCMS Locust was standing on a planet, I think minding his own business, when some children decided to start throwing some snowballs at the mech, which I think obviously that's fine, there's nothing too bad about that. However, the Locust pilot probably reacted a little bit and decided to throw some coolant down at the children, probably to scare them off, and probably didn't go to plan. He ended up burning, I think, a child or a couple of the children with the coolant. Probably shouldn't.
What?
Probably shouldn't throw that at children. it doesn't get much better as this goes on. So this then leads to, I assume, family members and citizens around the area kicking up a bit of a fuss about this happening, throwing maybe objects, rocks. I don't know if Molotov cocktails, that kind of thing. They're it's no longer snowballs. It's now things that are probably going to start damaging the cockpit.
Molotov cocktails are my favourite kind of object. It's the only time I've ever heard a Molotov cocktail referred to as an object.
It's an object. It's the kind of area and space I wouldn't expect them to have that, but I'm trying to think. They probably have something that's damaging the mech, or not damaging massively, but obviously distressing the mech warrior, because as this happens, the Locust Mech Warrior accidentally trips over, then crushing some of the rioters and aggravating the situation even further. The Mech Warrior, even more addled from this, then decides the best course of action is to start opening fire with the dual machine guns from the mech into the crowd. And the rest of that is history. This leads to even more riots, and then this information spreads across the Inner Sphere and periphery nations and leads to a number of agreements and some of the discussions going on at this point starting to dissolve, and people backing out of some of the treaties. So not a fantastic day for that mech warrior. I don't really know what happened to him after that, but I assume he probably wasn't in the DCMS any further. And knowing them from the previous episode, I'm sure it may have involved some sort of swords and beheadings.
Probably like a worst day for the people that got squashed by the mech, I would assume. Probably, the worst day you can have to getting squashed.
And like I said, it just started off with some kids throwing snowballs at a mech, and obviously it probably didn't need to go as far as it did, but it did, and is immortalized in that some of the across the Inner Sphere at the time. It caused quite high tensions that happening. Cool. But like I said, that's pretty much all to say about those guys, really. Any other questions you guys have got on them, or anything else you might want to know? Cool. Let's move on to somewhere a little bit further to the east, or further down. Let's move on to the Torian Concordat, and Tom's going to talk about them.
Thank you, Lewis. So, unlike the Outworlds Alliance, who are pacifists and literally don't do anything, the Torian Concordat, cool dudes. Now, their main personality is hating the Davians, which, when you look at where they are, which is just to the southeast of the Davians, it kind of makes sense, because the Taurians were founded by someone known as Samantha Calderon on the planet of Taurus, and her family was murdered by the Terran Alliance. So, the Terran Alliance murders her family, and then the government collapses, which leads that area of space in complete chaos. She then secures funding for a deep space expedition effort, travels to Taurus, starts starts putting down a colony, and kind of the rest is history. And the Concordat kind of keeps to itself while the Amaris Civil War is going on. Yeah. Just before the Amaris Civil War. So when the Terran Alliance is going on, they kind of keep to themselves. And then they come into contact with the Federated Sons and the Capellan Confederation. They then, unfortunately, have to do the whole reunification war, where they get sort of rolled over by the Davians and brought back into the fold of the Star League. So this sort of doesn't start very well, because 1 in 5 Taurians is killed in this war. This is sort of, I mean, from their perspective, it's a genocide. Then in 2765, there's something called the New Vandenberg Uprising, where you start to see breakaway states in the southeast of sort of the Concordat coming back again. And this actually directly leads to the Amaris Civil War. Because they support him, Stefan Amaris, as he promised that he would leave the periphery alone. Now, this is a lie, because he's a bad man.
He's not a bad man.
He's a bad man. He shot a child.
I'm sure he was a teenager, young adult at the time.
It doesn't make it any better. Either way, at the end of the Amaris Civil War and the dissolution of the Star League, they become free again. Now, the Fed Sons, because they are bad people, aren't really happy about this, and have kind of since then tried to bring back the Taurians back into the fold. And so this has led to quite a strong military presence known as the Taurian Defense Force. So they're probably they're one of the best and brightest of the periphery. They've got a strong military. They love combined arms, with a military sort of modeled on Napoleonic armies. So they love battle mechs, infantry, armor, just everything. Although they do only have one pretty beat up warship left. So, you know, it's not... They've got a lot of really good ground assets, so they can hold land, but they're not exactly able to take land. And you might think, well, the Davians, they're pretty militaristic, but they also kind of have a weird first prince system. So how do the politics of the Taurians work? Well, funnily enough, because they're in the same space and they kind of used to be ruled by the same people, there is actually a similar system in the Concordat where one person known as the Protector of the Realm is Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces and also the Executive Officer of the Concordat as a whole. Now, unlike Hans Davian, who is a tyrant, the coordinator actually allows a lot of democracy in the Concordat to occur. Each planet is actually given autonomy to rule how they want, and many of them rule through representative democracies. So, despite what you might think is a very insular, militaristic nation that is actually quite like, you know, the Davians made them out to be kind of like a terrorist breakaway state, they actually have a lot of democracy, and in the charter, the Concordat Charter, they are guaranteed free speech, free association, and free religious rights, freedom from unwarranted searches, the right to remain silent, trial by jury of their peers, with competent counsel, the right to freely move and pursue economic activity, free education, free healthcare, and to a living wage. And all they have to do is give 4 years of their life to either the Taurian military or the Taurian state. So, I would say, they get a bad rap, but that's because the Davians are the main characters of Battletech in 3025. But the Taurians are pretty cool.
It sort of sounds sort of like, it's sort of a, like the sort of Greek idea of how democracy works, like you kind of have to earn your citizenship and things like that. Is that right? You sort of earn your rights through military service?
So it's slightly different to the Capellans, where you have to give yourself and then you get rights. Every citizen's rights are enshrined in law in the Taurian Concordat.
Right.
But when you, it's like the current Swedish model or the Scandinavian model. You have your rights, but as part of that, you have to do citizen service for 4 years when you turn 18.
Sure.
And it's not even has to be in the military. It can be in the judicial branch, you know, something more civil. So you can just work as part of the government for 4 years.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, they're really cool, actually.
I was going to say, obviously out of lore. A lot of people refer to them as Space America or Space Texas. And they've got some cool mech variants as well, I think, looking at what they usually kick out.
Yeah, I disagree with that with that comparison, actually. I think they're more like a Space Scandinavia in actual kind of like your composition. Maybe their kind of their politics is more like Space America, but physically, like their government is more like a Space Scandi. Mm-hmm. They're pretty cool. They have capitalism with a human face as their kind of thing. So they're like a pretty cool state. And I think for being in the periphery and kind of being cut off from some of the really, really big money makers in the inner sphere, they've done a really good job for themselves.
Cool. Yeah. Anything more to go say on them, Tom?
Big up the Taurians.
Big up
Davians
the
ain't shit.
What do you mean? You can't say that about Davians.
They drop bombs on my guys.
Love me Federated sons. Simple as.
But yeah, if that's everything for the Taurians, then we can move a little bit further to the I suppose it's west now, isn't it? Yeah, west. To the and a bit further down as well to the is it Aurelian or Greedy? I can never know how to say it. Aurelian Reach.
It's the Aurelian Reach.
It's the Oregon Coalition. Oregon Reach.
Yeah.
So, these guys actually are extremely close, as Lewis put, to the Taurian Concordant, literally being down southwest of them. And to begin with, they were actually formed, somewhat inspired by the Taurians and the settlements on Taurus, by a bunch of traders from the Free Worlds League. And the people who went there were mainly Polynesian and Spanish Catholics. So during the Reunification War, it saw actual growth in the Aurelian Reach, and the SLDF built fortifications across planets in the region, and the Concordant erected a fortress, which would actually later become the palace of the Uranos and the main government building for the entire sector.
That's pretty cool.
At the same time, the Federation built fan industrial works on Mechdur, and at the time of the new Vandenberg uprising, the worlds of the future Aurelian correlation straddled the border between the Capellans and the Tauran states. So during the uprisings, followed the Amaris War and the First Succession War, led to the Capellans actually withdrawing, just leaving the Aurelian Reach. And there was a war between the Taurans and the Capellans, and they both just decided to leave the area, leaving the Reach to pretty much govern themselves. And with them governing themselves and not really having much contact outside of their area, most of the Inner Sphere just forgot about them, to be honest.
They're kind of like a lost colony. I suppose they still had contact if they wanted it, but it's almost like a lost colony in terms of their culture. Is that right? Sort of
they're very separated from the rest of the Inner Sphere. Mainly because their lack of dropships, which also caused the culture around the coalition to be extremely varied compared to the rest of the peripheries and the inner houses, which are a lot more homogenous with each other.
I see. I understand. Okay. So this is a very much sort of a... Does it ever get rediscovered? Do they ever get folded back into...
Well... what happens is that House Rano and House Espinosa, yeah. There we go. That they start working together and they form a defense and trade pact with a bunch of different houses in the area, including Madeira, Decimus, Carosa, and what is that name? Pararata, and the best house of all, House Gallus.
I think you're slightly biased there.
No, I'm not. I carried the entire league. Trust me, it doesn't say on anything. Anything you look up, it won't say.
Trust me.
But they
and,
are.
And just a note here around pronunciation. We make no apologies for any communication around pronunciation issues. We make no apologies whatsoever.
No, half us can't read and the other half can't pronounce what we are reading, so...
Yeah, exactly. We're the hex experts, not the language experts.
We could be the language experts.
Everything was going cosy. They've made a few attempts to contact the other great houses outside. But at the beginning of the 30th century, during the Third Succession War, they just pretty much gave up on joining the other successor houses. So what happened is that the coalition formally came together in 2910 and Kiona Arano became the High Lady of the Oregon Coalition. To begin with, they're only recognised by the Majesty of Canopus as natural state because they really did not have any communications outside of that. So the Coalition, after that, started expanding out and they started actually talking to people from the Turin Concordat about being annexed. But they've been abandoned for a bit. And the coalition was like, we still want those planets, so we're going to start taking them. And the Turin's like, I don't know about that. So there's a bit of tension starting to build up between the two of them. But everything was going mainly hunky-dory. Until the High Lord, Tamati II, and his wife, Serena, were killed on a jump ship accident in 3022. And this led to close friend of the houses, Santiago Espinosa, trying to propose to Tamati's daughter, Cameo Arano, who rejected it immediately on the spot. And then, because he considered her too naive to actually rule the area, he then went straight to having a coup.
So Battletech's first incel is this guy.
Yeah, definitely not the first incel, but in recent years, one of the most known incels, because this is where the harebrained scheme game start. So during the training exercise between complete nobody, who is you, the leader of the entire nation, and her mech trainer, a bloody coup happens where all of her cousins pretty much take over the realm. And this leads to an absolutely bloody civil war where slowly but surely Lady Cameo Arano starts taking back planet after planet from her erstwhile cousins.
Spoilers, Nathan. Eventually... Spoilers.
It's been out for... It's 2018, so that's like 7 years now? Yeah. Oh, you've got to complete... Especially if you're a Battletech fan, you have to complete it now. The only thing is, though, what's not mentioned in the game is that after they took it back, the Aranos had a nice look at all the different changes that the dictatorate put in. And they thought, you know what? Instead of being a coalition, having direct power over everyone sounds really nice, actually. So, they didn't actually make any of the changes, which caused a lot of upset. And that ended up with eventually them just completely dissolving and not being able to recover from the Civil War. And the entire Oregon Reach just reverting back to a classic backwater periphery region with no contact to anyone else and not even appearing on any of the maps.
So pretty much like nothing ever happened. it was a dream.
It was a blip of something happened and then nothing ever happened. It doesn't affect anything outside of it except for Capellan and Torrens coming in and doing a bit of pirating and then leaving after getting some resources. But yeah, for the most part, they're an absolute mixed bag of different people. for the most part, they're a mixture of Polynesians, Spanish, and people from modern-day Pakistan, both with language, culture, and the religion. But due to, as I said before, them not having any jump ships, they really can struggle to communicate sometimes because they'll be a lot very homogenous on certain planets, but they won't intermingle that much with the other ones.
Cool. But yeah, as Nathan said as well, if you want to know more about that, obviously you can look it up, or I would recommend grabbing the Harebrained Schemes if you've not already got that and have a play through the campaign. It's a pretty fun time. But yeah, so that's the Aurelian Reach, and we're going to move across to another break and jump back into a new section before we finish off the main section. So catch you guys in a minute. Welcome back, guys, and we've got a new section from Nathan, and I'm going to let him take the lead on this because I don't know what he's done.
So, welcome to a new section of the pod called Your Tech or Lore Tech. This is a section where I either come in with an absolutely insane fact about the BattleTech universe, or I come in with a complete lie. And these three have to try and guess which one it is. Are you guys ready?
I really like this original idea.
It's totally original. Don't sue us, Yogscast Tom and Ben, live on Wednesdays where they do this. Don't sue us, please. This is totally original, guys. Trust me.
I think legally we're fine because they do it for Warhammer, which is completely different.
it's a different game.
It's transformative. It's transformative. We're fine.
It is, yeah. This is actually new content, so really.
And it's a parody, I think, so it means we're good.
Exactly. Warhammer's like a weapon. It's not even a miniature game, is it?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
So yeah, let's get into it. So, for the first one, I thought I'd bring something in from everything. I thought we'd bring something in from something that we all love, which is obviously the BattleTech cartoon.
Oh no!
So, this week's Your Tech or Lore Tech is that the real Nikolai Malthus did not appreciate his portrayal in the animated series, which is an actual canon thing in the universe, and is just reviewed as a really poor propaganda device by the Lyrans. And in doing this, he wanted to declare a troll grievance against, for his treatment in the show against the Lyrans. So the Lyrans actually took this up, and they decided that they'd just do a trial under Lyran law. And what ended up happening is that in the courtroom, Malthus did not agree with this and ended up declaring another betrayal, this time against the judge, who he threw himself at and started beating up. So after a lengthy assault trial, a failed lawsuit, and 6 months in prison at a Lyran detention centre, he was finally given back to the Jade Falcons, who, when interviewed, said that the treatment of Malthus in the show was actually really accurate.
24 hours in space custody.
No, 6 months in space custody.
Oh my god, that's a long time.
So, what do you guys think? Do you think this is your hammer, your tech, or lore tech?
Before we carry on, I'm just going to click on our soundboard.
You dare to refuse my bajol?
Yeah, I've got that out of my system now. Carry on.
Well, it seems as though the Lyrans did. So, I'm going to say that I think, Nathan, you put a lot of work into this podcast, but I think that is so outlandish that it could only be true. I do think Nikolai Malthus took grievance with his portrayal in the show, which is a piece of propaganda, and then fought a judge.
In my opinion, I think I'm imagining this guy to look a bit like the guy from The Sopranos that has like one arm in like in a sling while he's at the court and he's like throwing himself at the judge, as I don't know exactly who Nicholas
I'll remind you that he is the guy that I use as an icon for this podcast.
Oh, okay. Well, as I don't listen to our podcast, I have no idea who that is. Anyway, I'm going to say it's your tech. I'm saying it's your tech. I think you made it up. in the words of Jonathan Frakes.
Okay, I know the answer to this, which is why I've been quiet and not said anything. I think Tom does as well. It is correct. We often talk about how it's funny that he did actually take grievance with his portrayal within the cartoon.
You two are right. This is entirely lore tech. This is actually true. He just completely sued for full plagiarism and justifying his character and just launched himself at the judge in the courtroom. And during peace time, he's arrested for 6 months just in prison.
Well, apparently, but Charles are not part of the
Lyran code of law, no?
Obviously, we don't know what a Bachal is, who this guy is, or anything at the moment, because we're talking about 3025, but when we do know about it, oh boy, it's going to be funny.
Well, we've all participated in at least one Bachal,
yes.
Which was who gets to run this podcast, and Lewis did win. So
I did win.
Yeah.
Super duper.
Cost you 10 million sea bills. Not happy about it.
Yeah. That's the section finished,
yep.
Isn't it, Nathan? Cool.
That's the section.
And do you think we'll be seeing this again, or is that the first and last time?
Well, it depends on what the people in the comments think about this. I mean,
comment on the podcast if you do think that was a cool section. I think it's a great section personally. I also think it's very original.
I think you guys liked it, even with Dom's sarcasm at the second part of that. But you guys like it. The only problem is that I need to find more deep cuts, or you guys need to try and find more deep cuts to try and get the rest of us, or just do a, or just absolutely lie out of my teeth.
Guys, write in to the pod.
But we're all going to see it. It doesn't work.
I don't check the email.
Oh yeah, I suppose Tom doesn't check the email. I've locked myself out the email, so it's just Nathan sees it at the moment.
Right to the Hexpert helpline at gmail.com and sending your tech or your law techs.
Cool.
We'll see you next week for this bit.
Yeah, okay. We'll go back to a break and we're going to then join back in on the second part of our main section. Catch you guys in a minute. And welcome back from Nathan's Corner, as I like to call it. I don't think he likes me calling it that. But let's get back onto our main section. And we're going to hand back across to Tom, and he's going to be talking about the Magistracy of Canopus.
Whoa, thank you, Lewis. Yes, the Magistracy...
Sorry, wrong image.
Oh, no.
Anyway, yeah, Magistracy of Canopus, go on, Tom.
Thanks for that beautiful image, Nathan. That's probably what you think of when you think of the Magistracy Catgirls. Now, I'm here to tell you, okay, if there are no Magistracy lovers left in the world, it is because I am dead. I love the Magistracy. They are my favourite periphery nation. Literally deep south, just left of the Taurians. They are a matriarchal society led by a magistrix, which is an elected position open to any woman in the magistracy, but has been largely controlled for many centuries by House Centrella due to the family's popularity. Now, those of you, I know there are some magistracy haters in the chat, and that is because you guys do not like the hedonistic lifestyle. You do not like the open society. No, actually, I can't say that. So the Canopians really love the pursuit of just, not necessarily excess, but being the ability to do what you want. As long as everyone's consenting, and as long as everyone's happy with what's going on, nobody cares. Now, this has both been a really good thing and a really bad thing for Canopus. So we'll start with the bad, because I want to go on to the good. The bad is that the Canopian economy is pretty much only made up of travel and tourism. They do make some battle mechs, and they do have kind of a small military industrial complex, but they are kind of the place to go if you want to kind of do what you want. It's sort of Sin City.
So it's like Riser from Star Trek.
Or, more importantly, to something that I know, Las Vegas, but cool.
I would have gone
Star Trek.
I would have gone more for like Space Amsterdam, to be honest.
I think it's just basically every as long as everyone's happy and no one's getting hurt, everything is legal.
Okay.
And this is where you do get this. I have to do address this. Catgirls don't exist. I'm sorry.
What? I think they do exist. And
I thought you were trying to convince me to play BattleTech.
I'm sorry. Yeah. No. Women that are also cats do not exist. There are some people in Canopus that have modified themselves using prosthetics to take that appearance.
But there are no centaur people as well. I'm sure.
I'd say that counts.
No. No, I'm not. We're not flanderizing my boys. Or girls, actually, in this case. We're not flanderizing my girls. Now, with the good.
Yeah.
The Magistracy, they're cool people. Anyone can go there. If you're a political refugee, if you're just a cool dude, if you are sort of just any reason that you want to be in Canopus, you are allowed to be there. And you are afforded free rights for everyone. Now, the kind of flip side to this is that only women are allowed in governmental positions. So the Magistrix, who is an elected autocrat, who serves until death or they are impeached. One person does rule for a little bit until they die, but they can be impeached by the Canopian Central Committee, and so they're kind of kept in check with some other people. But apart from that, they kind of let everyone go with whatever they want. The courts, very democratic. And citizenship, you can basically apply depending on who you are. Like, it doesn't matter. If you can prove that you're fleeing political, religious, or social persecution from anywhere within the Inner Sphere, you are immediately granted citizenship, and your descendants are as well. So, you know, another really fun thing is if you are a citizen, you cannot be extradited without the Magistrix's express permission. So this is kind of a way for the Canopians to allow political refugees from some of the more close-minded areas to sort of stay there and not kind of be extradited by sort of other governments. So I know a lot of Capellans flee south during a lot of periods. On pain of death kind of deal. But yeah, it's very democratic. All citizens have to participate in every election. Although, actually, one of the options you can pick is none of the above. If none of the above sort of happens, runoff elections occur. Very boring politics. No one wants to listen to this. Their military is quite small. And because they view it as something as a necessary evil. So they don't like it. They'd like to kind of make friends with other people. But they do have it. And sometimes they do need it. So to sort of supplement this quite small military, they start using a lot of mercenary forces, which we'll get on at a later date. So kind of, it's this sort of decentralized hub of sort of travel, tourism, a little bit of excess, but partying and sort of everyone expressing themselves to the best of their ability, that's sort of backed up by being not necessarily everyone's friend, but nobody's enemy. Although later on they do actually make friends with some other people. But for the moment, they're kind of an independent nation where everyone goes to spend money and gamble and drink.
So it's sort of like sexy Switzerland.
Yeah, sort of. I would say it's sexy. Sexy Switzerland makes sense. Switzerland come Las Vegas together.
Cool. Makes sense to me.
Cool. But it sounds like, Tom, the other episode you mentioned that you might actually want to live in Terra, but I've got a feeling it sounds like you may have reconsidered this.
No, I mean, I'd love to live. I think I just want to be part of Comstar, but like, if they had a Precentor Canopus, I'd live down there. 100%. Sounds great.
They definitely do, and nothing cool. Bad definitely happens to that presenter later on. I'm sure, Nathan, you know about that.
Cool.
Yeah, so anyone got any other questions about Canopus before we move on to the next nation?
Sounds like a swell place to me.
Swell place. Are we not allowed to do any catgirl jokes going forward?
I will kill
Okay. We'll cut back on those then anyway.
So that's not a threat. That's a promise.
That's a promise. Cool. So, obviously, then it's going to move on to our next nation, and that's going to be me, and I'm going to be talking about the Meryem Hegemony, which is a nation a little bit to the galactic, I suppose, west, kind of near the Free Worlds border or around that side. It's relatively new in the kind of grand scheme of things for periphery nations. It's been a world which was established by a periphery native, Jonah Sebastian O'Reilly, in 2090-20, who was prospecting on the planet of... which planet is it again? I've written it down. The planet of something, Alphard. To be honest, he was looking for some Star League tech, and he wanted to find some lost tech on the planet, but managed to stumble upon a massive amount of germanium, which we haven't really talked about yet, but kind of jumping the gun a touch. Germanium is important for a lot of technology, and most importantly the KF drives, which is the drives the drop ships, or sorry, the jump ships used to go into hyperspace and move between planets or sectors. So obviously this being on the planet is very important, and has basically kind of netted him a lot of money. Obviously this has happened, and he's thinking, I'm just a little fella out in the periphery, I need to not cause a big stink about having this. So he decides to set up a colony out there and starts to employ some mercenaries to kind of guard this kind of trade hub he set up, obviously not letting people know how big of a germanium deposit he's got. And basically it kind of starts growing from there, and obviously with the kind of secret backing of this supply of germanium, which I think they start to kind of gather, is there. But obviously after the point where they've kind of established themselves with the protection of a small mercenary force, things carry on for them. Basically they obviously start to develop their own forces, and somewhere along the line as well they decide that it would be real cool if they start basing a lot of their buildings, their government, and their military off ancient Rome. A bit unusual. I think it'd been noted in a couple of sources as looking a bit like a tacky knockoff of what ancient Rome is. Probably more like a Las Vegas Rome than an actual Rome. But that's kind of what they've kind of developed along with. Part of this is that they've kind of gone down the kind of ancient Roman kind of society, where they've got an imperator, and later on, not at this point, they start to call the Caesar. They've got plebeians, all their citizens, and less popular, they've also got slaves, which they use and take, obviously from some of the pirate raids that they had been doing and still do.
And I just want to say that the Hexperts podcast disagrees with slavery.
Yeah, obviously not something we would condone.
Piracy, however!
We are not in favour of slavery here at Hexperts, so. just to be super clear.
Cool. Going forward, the hegemony, they start to develop their own armed forces, which acts a little bit different to the kind of setups you see in a lot of the other armies within the Inner Sphere, where they start breaking themselves into legions, which then get divided again into cohorts, and then into sentries, and then the maniples, which is the single units. And usually, for them, their sentries are groups of 5 battle mechs, or for squads of infantry, they're 10s, which we'll probably come to at some point, where the majority of forces in the Inner Sphere at this point break down into 4s. I think really that's about that for them at this point. They do have some more kind of history and lore, but that's kind of starts happening after this 30-25 point, so we might come and visit them again at a later point. But yeah, guys, any questions on the Merry from Germany? I think they're pretty cool. They're pretty cool, not with the slavery part, but more the kind of space Rome and having that kind of Rome aesthetic.
I do like all the rare earth materials that they've got going around you.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's at this point, but they do start to develop. They do have their own kind of mechs. I think probably it's a little bit later on, but they do have seems to be quite a big love of rocket launchers, which they look very cool, but I've not really got on with myself in the past.
No, I've had a look at them, and I've got to say, I do not love being able to do 20 damage one time, and that's it for the entire game.
But usually you can do that. You can shoot them all at once, but it might not go very well for you.
Yep.
Cool. So, yeah, that's the Merry from Hegemony. And next, we're going to be moving on to the Oberon Confederation. That we're going to hand him back over to Nathan.
So, yeah, we're moving on to the Oberon Confederation. And as you can see, having a snake eye as your symbol means that you're automatically the best symbol in the periphery. So, these guys were born as the conflict between the Lauren Commonwealth and the Rimworld Republic around 2773. This is the first Rimworld, the first Oberon Confederation. It was just a free system nation. However, they got raided constantly, lost a bunch of technology, and pretty much ceased to exist for ages. And then what happened is this guy called Colonel Hedrick Grimm, who was a Lauren Commonwealth officer, felt like he just got deserted by the entire Commonwealth. And him and his units made straight for the periphery in 2840 and eventually settled on the old capital world of Oberon IV in 2855. And then soon after, a bunch of other military units deserting the Inner Sphere, hoping to escape a life of constant war to get nothing back, fled over to them. And that's when the good old Oberon Confederacy was truly born. So during its early years, for the most part, all it did is do a bunch of pirate raids against the Lauren Commonwealth and the other border which it sat on, which was the Draconis Combine. And usually this was after stuff like electronics and spare mech parts. But as time went on, they realised, oh, we've got a bunch of civilians now which we need to look after. So they started doing a lot of raids on infrastructures of planets to be able to take it back and look after their subjects rather than just themselves. And after a bit, they started trying to actually be a bit self-sustaining. But mining efforts on the planet led to just famine across the entirety of Oberon IV. But luckily, this one group of guys called the Yarnfolk came along and at extreme costs started giving Oberon IV, or Oberon VI, a lot of food. Meaning that they were able to sustain themselves. But yeah, after that they managed to start industrialising their world and starting to use their natural resources without causing giant widespread famines across the planet, which is really nice. However, the Hansentic League started undercutting the Yarnfolk for the price of a lot of the services that they were giving them. However, like the Yarnfolk, they were using slave labour to achieve these, while the Yarnfolk wouldn't. Hence why it was a lot cheaper for them. So, after that, they just remained as a typical periphery until about 3001, where a bunch of war material from an unknown source, wink, trickled into the periphery area beyond the Steiner Karita realms. During this time, a bunch of new bandit kingdoms started appearing, some of them operating from Hithereto. Heaven.
It's got H in it.
The two unknown places, all forgotten Star League sites, and there's a lot of pirate activity in the Oberon region until the events wound down after about 3004. And while they're in, they were smack bang in the middle of what was known as the Jolly of the area where the Jolly Roger affair played out, there's no specific information about their involvement. It was noted, however, that the power of the Grimm family rapidly grew in the decades preceding the year 3025. So, I mean, if you put the pieces together, you can tell that they had a bit of influence over the whole pirate raids against both of the major houses. But you can't bring them back to them, can you? So, in 3012, Oberyn VI became the home world of the most infinite bandit kingdom, the Oberyn Confederation, from where the ex-Lauren Colonel, Grimm, would lead raiding parties against unprotected targets. Combined with the fact that the Federation, was founded by the grandfather of the like King Hedric Grimm III, this seemed to establish that Hedric Grimm III, who reinvented the Confederation as a political entity that had existed for two centuries as his own pirate realm. So during his reign, he took over ruling from his father, who was obviously Hedric II. And pretty much they just continue to be pirates for a long time. And even despite that, they actually managed to get some trade deals with the Lorans and the Draconis Combine, which was surprising seeing that they were just riding them the entire time. Yeah. And then where was it? Sorry, there's one bit that I really wanted to talk about. Not the blackout. There we go.
This is sort of a major event that you're going towards, right?
Yeah, so what happens is that they end up forming a little mercenary force from natives from the other two planets, and they decide to have a nice little dishonorable sneak attack against a group called Carlisle's Commandos, who totally aren't important and will never bring up again, on Trowan in 3024. And in doing this, they're hired by the Lyrans, but act out the orders of Duke Hasid Recall, who obviously we won't hear about again
anytime soon,
who is one of the dukes in the Draconis Combine. And they ended up attacking the Carlisles and absolutely killing them. And up till 2035, that is the last major thing they go into, just wiping out these nobodies called the Carlisle Commandos, who are a mercenary unit.
Cool.
I've never heard of them before.
Well, also, I was going to say that I think some of the stuff you mentioned there, Nathan, you might see if you've been playing through some of MechWarrior 5's campaign as well. Obviously, spoilers. you might end up in that area of space towards the end of the game.
I'll be honest, I didn't know it was the Oberons that murked Grayson's dad. That's cool. Ties it all in.
So, before this episode, I didn't know much about them, but I also didn't know that they were hired by the Capellans to then work under the Draconis Combine to then kill the Carlisles. So it's just a massive web of I'm hired by you to be hired by you to be hired by you to kill him.
It wouldn't be Battletech if it wasn't that easy, if it was extremely convoluted.
True.
Cool. Yeah, anything more for them, Nathan? Or I think you've pretty much covered everything. No, I think there is.
That's about it. a bandit pirate kingdom ruled by an ex-Lyran commander who went on to both raid the Draconis Combine and the Lyrans, and also somehow be somewhat politically okay with them.
Yeah, he seems to have done quite well for himself.
For now.
for now. Oh dear.
Some things happen in the future, which is a bit of an uh-oh, but we're not there yet.
Not yet. So he's okay for now. Cool. But yeah, that's a little look at some of the major players in the outer inner sphere or the periphery states. So yeah, and we're probably going to catch you guys in our outro in a second. So catch you in a sec. Welcome back, guys, and welcome back to the outro for the episode. Thanks for listening, and obviously, thanks for some of the support and feedback we've had over the past couple of weeks. I suppose that's all it's been, really. And we've taken a lot of what you've said to heart, and we've adjusted some of the audio issues with our first YouTube episode. Obviously, listening on podcasts, you wouldn't have that issue. And as we mentioned at the start of the episode, please don't forget to follow, subscribe, comment wherever you're listening, or if you want to listen in other places, please do. And as you said, the comments and feedback is really useful to us, A, because it helps us improve, and B, it helps the wherever you're listening know that you're interested and it should be put in front of you and others. For contacts, feel free to contact us at the hexpertshelpline@gmail.com and our Instagram hexperts_battletech_podcast. And I think there's some other places you can contact us, but we'll put them in the show notes.
And not to step on your toes there, Lewis.
Don't step on them, that hurts. Please stop stepping on my toes.
I just wanted to say that if you have any your tech or law tech that you'd like to add to the comments, don't tell us if it's your tech or law tech, and we in the next episode will address those, we'll address your comments.
Cool, that'd be pretty funny. I'm sure there's more that that we don't know about.
There's definitely more.
Definitely. But yeah, any anything to shout out, guys, or anything you want to say before we head on out?
Shout out everyone here. Obviously, you know, I kind of I'm the somewhat of an audience surrogate here. I don't have to do a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to research. So all of you guys, thanks for putting that show on for us today. And you know, please just let us know if how well the guys have been doing. You know, give them that feedback. Let them know that you're really happy with them, because I'm really happy with them. They make me happy.
Happy little fella.
Yeah, exactly. Not even that little.
Not even that little. Yeah, super. Any of the guys got anything to say before we're heading out?
I think next episode we're tackling, I don't know if you've already said this, Lewis.
I have not said
but
it
next
yet.
Next episode we're going to tackle mercenaries. Probably the most the most interesting bit of Battletech. Sort of a real blend of kind of 16th century Landsknecht, and then more kind of 20th century organizations. So we'll see how that comes together, and I think Dom, you'll find that really interesting, because there are some real personalities that are around in 3025, and a lot of good deep history, which is what I like.
Sounds good to me.
I'm sure you made up some of those words just then, but yeah, we'll catch you guys on the next one. Catch you later.
Bye.
See you hex time.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, that was good.
No, it's not.